Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Regardless of your politics, you are probably familiar with Keyser Khan. He's the Gold Star parent who, during a speech at the Democratic National Convention, helped pay tribute to his Army captain's son, who was killed in Iraq a few years earlier. With his wife at his side, the elder Khan was critical of then-candidate Donald Trump's divisive campaign rhetoric and questioned whether the candidate had ever read the Constitution or ever visited Arlington National Cemetery. For emphasis, he offered his own personal copy of the Constitution for Mr. Trump to read. It was a media sensation. Keyser Khan has since written a book about his family and that speech. It is titled An American Family, A Memoir of Hope and Sacrifice. Mr. Khan joins me in studio. It's a great pleasure to have you with us, sir. Thank you for being with us.
Well, good morning.
I think when we look back at that Democratic National Convention, the key moment in the entire convention, regardless of the fact that there was a woman candidate running for president, was your speech. It was quite remarkable. How did you feel about the way it was received?
Well, America has sent us thousands and thousands of letters and cards telling us what it meant to them. This is the theme of those letters and cards. Thank you for reminding us the goodness of these values, the goodness of our Constitution, the dignities that are enshrined in our Constitution, the values that this nation is built upon. Thank you for reminding us. So it was received well. It continues to resonate as a reminder of the goodness that enshrines in our Constitution.
I can't believe, however, there aren't some critics of Keyser Khan out there. Do you hear from them?
Oh, yes, of course, of course. Mm-hmm. But we can tell from the distance when a letter is unkindly written to us. They don't write the return address on the envelope. That speaks volume. And there are only few that such letters have been written, voice messages, emails. But those could be tracked back where it came from, and we simply hand it over to authorities and if it is more serious. But that not writing the return address or the name of the person speaks volume that it is a very small minority that is divisive, that continues to speak ill of our documents, our values.
You speak of comments that are, quote, more serious. Have there been threats against your life from any of these critics?
Those are minor, ignorable, I normally don't talk about the negativity because it is so little and because it is so not us, meaning us America, us American. When somebody speaks about the greatness that is enshrined in our founding documents, the values that have made us beacon of hope for the rest of the world, I am directly witness to the leaderships of the world coming to United States wanting to learn how does this rule of law works in your system? How does this court system work? We want to learn. We want to take this back to our countries and all. So some things that have made us beacon of hope for the rest of the world enshrined in these documents, the difficulty or the hatred towards us that hold these values so dear to us. Twice in my life, I have lived under martial law. No dignities, none of these liberties, the freedom of press, the freedom of faith, the freedom of assembly, none of that was my share. Only in the United States, we have all of this guaranteed to us.
This realization obviously did not come to you just recently. You became intrigued by the Constitution and its contents at a very young age in Pakistan.
Yeah, I was 22 years old in 1972, and I took a course in law school, and the title of the course was Comparative Study of World Constitution. And the first, and there were four parts of the course. First was Constitution of Soviet Union, then Constitution of Germany and Magna Carta, the foundation of the British legal system, and then, of course, the U.S. Constitution. And the very first page of those materials was Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. When I read the word declaration. Are there people on this planet that declare their independence? In colonized system of world, you don't declare your independence. You ask, you beg, you appeal, you protest, but you never declare your independence. What is this nation? What kind of people are these that have declared their independence? Not now, but in 1776, they declared their independence. Rest of the world suffered through for two additional centuries under colonization. So I was in awe at that, and I read in one standing, I remember slipping my shoes off because my feet were hurting when I was standing and reading the Declaration of Independence, all 1,338 words of it, all 18 grievances, one at a time. Then I read our articles. So that is how civilized people live. That is how their court system, that's how their state and federal relations. And then came the best part, which is our Bill of Rights. Guaranteed. I call them, those are human dignities that every person on this planet Earth, let's go to the darkest corner of the Earth and say, do you want to have freedom to speak? Person will say, yes. Do you want to have freedom to practice your faith, regardless of what faith it is? Person will say, yes. Do you want to have right to assemble, right to protest, right to seek solution to your grievances? They will say yes. But they are not guaranteed. The only this blessed nation has all of these guarantees enshrined in our Bill of Rights.
You seem to be a man on a mission now, post-Democratic National Convention. You have another book in which you want to make sure that the message you're giving us here today is passed along to very young readers. Tell us about that.
Yeah. We went to a middle school to speak on Constitution, and to the middle school, 7th and 8th graders came together, and they had printed U.S. Constitution on pieces of paper, and they had stapled them. We asked their teachers that have taught civics course for 20 years. I asked them, is there a nonpartisan book where these documents are explained at the level of our middle school? And we were told, no, there isn't any. So we quickly put together a book that's called This Is Our Constitution. It's an introduction to all of these founding documents, why these documents are important, why, and it is through my story. In fact, our story is a story of all immigrants. It's not only just my family's story. So because of that at a very early age, we want to put the love and introduction and familiarity with our founding documents in the hearts and minds of our future leaders, I call them, our future generation. And so it is that effort in that book.
And that is certainly available. And the title of that book is, so our audience will know it.
It's This Is Our Constitution.
This is our Constitution.
And grandparents are loving it to present it to their grandchildren. Teachers are liking it. Parents are liking it, not only to give a gift to their children, but to read themselves as well, because some of us have not read these documents in the detail.
This seems to be a particularly important time to be reacquainting ourselves with the provisions of the Constitution and even the Declaration of Independence.
It very much is, and the reason is very simple. And I relate it to those circumstances. I have lived twice under martial law, without these dignities, without any of these guarantees. So I know how it feels to not have any of that is enshrined in these documents, especially the current circumstances throughout the world. The authoritarian regimes, the mentality of authoritarian, the dictators, the oligarchs and all, they don't like. The reason is that in last century, democracy had expanded. They did not like that challenge to their system of government, of authoritarian system, oligarchy, the control of the ordinary citizens. So they launched an attack on democracy. Now we are discovering slowly and gradually that attack through social media in last election to delegitimize our elections, our democracy, was a deliberate effort. How successful they were, we leave that for history to determine, but right now, as Captain Humayun Khan wrote many years ago, my son, an article, and the title of that article is so relevant today, and the title was Democracy Requires Vigilance and Sacrifice.
You clearly feel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've got this right, that you clearly feel that the freedoms that we all cherish are being challenged right now.
They are. I simply say to your audience that there are two characters of authoritarian mentality. You draw the conclusion, you connect the dot, and the very first thing is they do not like free press. I have seen press newspapers being shut down, newspaper printing presses burnt and locked up because they printed something critical of the ruler. So they do not like, the authoritarian mentality does not like media, free press, which is the salient feature of American democracy, free press. The very first guarantee in our Constitution is amazing, amazing first five words. Congress shall make no law. There is no other constitution that guarantees those liberties. I have done that exercise. I have read many world's constitution. I could not find where even the Congress, the supreme legislative body, is being forbidden. You cannot touch these liberty. And among them is the freedom of press is number one. The second character, the first is authoritarian mentality does not like free press. Second, they do not like rule of law. These judges are no good. They do harm to the nation. I will decide what is good for this nation. These two characters are symbol of all of the authoritarian mentalities that we see throughout the world. It is to make ourselves aware of all the dignities that are enshrined, that our democracy is under challenge. We have prevailed before, we will prevail now, but we must be aware and vigilant.
You are listening to Keyser Khan, the author of An American Family, and you'll remember him, of course, from his very, very dramatic speech at the Democratic National Convention last year. We have to take a break now. Keyser Khan will do that and come back and continue our conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Keyser Khan. Mr. Khan, I assume you're not going to be meeting with President Trump today when he's in town.
Well, I got here first. And my offer to the president remains standing, that for a person occupying the most dignified office of this land must read the Constitution, must be familiar with its provisions, and so he could avoid the violation after violation of it.
Right. I'd like to go back to the 2016 convention, because as you point out in your book, which is a wonderful read, by the way, and we can't go into all the details, but I'll just mention one of the things that struck me, that you, as a 36-year-old man in Boston going to Harvard, were sleeping on a park bench. I mean, that's just part of the story that's remarkable in its many, many, many complexities. But going back to that convention, your wife, your friends, people that you knew and loved said, don't make that speech. Don't accept the invitation. Why did you decide to do it?
When that bigoted statement was made in December of 2015, if I'm elected president, I will ban all Muslims. I will throw out all criminals. Hispanics are all criminals. They'll be thrown out of here. We will build a wall. Judges are partial, and women don't deserve equal dignity and all. So after that statement, whenever we would go to our grandchildren, our children's friends at birthday parties, small children, they will come that in a school we are being harassed, we are being told that we will be thrown out of here. We will not be able to complete our elementary school. So I would pull out the Constitution from my pocket and I will read them the 14th Amendment, Section 1, equal protection, due process. No, no, no. If you're born here, you belong here and all of that. But some children would be heartened and some wouldn't. They would not eat properly. They were not interested in doing their homework because when they go to school, their peers would bully them and tell them, oh, you will be thrown out of here. You will never see your parents when you go home. They will not be there. So children were very much worried, and we were aware of that. Then came the invitation, and we pondered for 2 days whether we should accept it or we should decline it. We almost decided that this is not our cup of tea. We are modest, humble, peaceful people. But then came a letter that sent us to the convention. Second day in the afternoon, I go to check the mail, and there is a white envelope without a stamp, so somebody must have come to the mailbox and left it there. And that one line, four students wrote that, the name of the school on top of that card, and this is what they wrote that sent us there. It said, Mr. Khan, would you make sure that Maria is not thrown out of this country? Mm-hmm. She's our friend, and we love her. I looked at that card twice, and I know what questions had been asked of me by these small kids that were worried about their well-being. I brought that card to Ghazala, and she, with her eyes welled, she looked at me and she said, we will go.
You know, I don't know you other than that I've seen you on television, and we just had a chance to meet here, but that card still makes you emotional. I think you were very close to tears as you were telling that story.
It certainly does, because it is the concern that had been the life that we have lived, caring for others. That was the motto and the mission of Captain Humayun Khan. He gave his life in care of others. And it was that spirit that we, even today, we remembered how concerned these children were. So we went and we spoke. And then there came thousands and thousands of letters afterwards. And then came another 26-page letter that sometime I mentioned. We mentioned that letter in the book in detail, written by a retired Army nurse of Second World War. She tells her story of serving in the Second World War in Europe. And then at the end, on the 26th page, she writes, Mr. and Mrs. Khan, continue to speak. Had there been more people speaking prior to Second World War, we could have avoided Second World War. World did not speak loud enough. The atrocities that were committed against our Jewish brothers and sisters, against the humanity, could have been avoided if more people would have spoken. So continue to speak. So it is that those two events, small children, their well-being at our concern, a letter from a retired Army nurse imploring, asking us to continue to speak, keeps us moving forward.
Well, once the decision was made to speak, the decision to use your own pocket version of the Constitution came pretty late, just before you actually did it, didn't it?
Yeah.
Tell us how that came about.
The original line was, you have not read the Constitution of the United States. If you read the Constitution, look for the word liberty and equal protection and all that. So since 2005, I had been keeping a copy of the Constitution in my pocket for a specific reason. We used to, whenever the guest dignitaries, and especially Humayun's friends, armies, personnel would come over home, we would give them a gift of Senator McCain's book titled Why Courage Matters, because that was the last book. Most people don't know that. We tell that story in our book. That was the last book that Captain Humayun Khan read, which I sent to him in Iraq, Why Courage Matters, A Way to Braver Life, Senator McCain's book. But that became an expensive deal for me because it costed $20 a copy. So I was renewing my American Bar Association membership, and I saw advertised Constitution, pocket Constitution, 99 cents. And I thought that would be a more appropriate gift. So we used to give that as a gift, and I used to keep a copy of it in my pocket. So now we are in Philadelphia, ready to go to the convention to speak, and they have told us, make sure that there are no keys or coins in your pockets, and so security could be easy for you. So I'm checking as we are walking out towards the elevator, and I realize that I have something in my pocket and left side of my coat. So I told Ghazala, I said, I have this copy of Constitution in my pocket. Can I pull it out when I say, have you read the Constitution? And she says, no, you cannot. Mm-hmm. We have to ask their permission. So I said, okay. So we sat in the taxi and I said, okay, so we will ask the permission. But how should I pull it out if they give us the permission? So I pull it out and she said, well, look, this is upside down. Let's practice this. So we are sitting in the cab and we are practicing how we would pull it out and all. Then we took the permission of the producers and all that. And so that's how it came to be.
Again, as I said at the very outset, quite a moment. I hope this question isn't too personal, but you know, having read the book, and I certainly understand the very, very touching moments when you talk about your sons deciding to join the ROTC and then going overseas. And how do you grieve for him today?
Well, if you ask Ghazala, if you asked his mother, she would tell you this. Why people say he has left us? He has not left us. He's with us. We were blessed to have him physically for 27 years. We still have the grace and the light that he brought with us, that his spirit left with us. The light, the candle that he started, continues to light other candles. The proceeds of these books, look, some good continues to comes out of it. The proceeds of these books, we have set up in a scholarship at University of Virginia, titled Captain Humayun Khan Memorial Scholarship Fund on Need Base. And we just received a card 2 days ago. The very first student that received the card, he expresses the gratitude. And there is a line that I think this whole effort is worth, and Captain Humayun Khan and his legacy lives on. And the line says, thank you for making University of Virginia possible for me. It is that's how we grieve. We celebrate his 27 years with us. And thereafter, some good has continued to come out.
Still, obviously, a very, very motivating factor in your life, clearly.
Yes, it is, because we only took a high school graduate to University of Virginia. All the values of Thomas Jefferson on the blessed grounds of University of Virginia in Charlottesville, of service to others, care of others. He learned and he was taught at the university, and he was so faithful to the oath of office, oath to the Constitution of the United States, that his last moment of his life was at full display of those values, care of others.
Speaking of universities, I noted in the book that of the universities that you were considering when you were planning to study in this country, the University of Missouri was on the list.
Of course. It's very dear to me and University of Missouri and its impact and its initially formation of my thoughts and my moving forward in life and all that is a very profound one.
And you actually did some studies there at one point later on.
I am grateful for that, yes, for that opportunity. What a blessed place.
We're starting to hear from members of our audience. 382-8255 is our number if you want to call in the time we have remaining. But I have an email here from Sheila, who says, quote, after hearing you speak, I got a portable copy of the Constitution for my daughter. What other actions could you suggest to me as a parent to teach her about defending the freedom we hold as Americans?
Well, I think that is a wonderful gesture. This is our Constitution is another way that children are liking it because it is written in such a light manner.
This is your other book we talked about earlier, yes.
Other book that we have written, giving this to her. And especially page 154, when she will have a smile on her face and sharing these stories, sharing how we compare our liberties with the rest of the world will put love and affection of these documents in their hearts and in their minds that will last forever, generations to come.
Generations are important to you because your grandfather was very important to you as a young man. He set the table for the rest of your life, didn't he?
He certainly did. I used to sleep under moonlight, not out of vanity, but out of necessity, because we did not have electricity. So he would come to my cot every night, almost every night, and he would read a story or tell me a story or two. And there are two quotes that are very dear to me, and I write that in the book as well. First was, be a river. So what if you're thirsty yourself? Mm-hmm. Be a river for others. And that set the tone of my life, that lake of resources should not be a hindrance to generosity or moving forward towards others. And the second was, your education is not complete. A person is not complete up until your education is complete. That sent this life on a mission that continues even today.
I was going to say it was something that you took to heart for all of your life. We have a couple of calls here for Cusa Khan. Let's bring in Dennis calling from Overland. Dennis, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Actually, Don, it's Guanajuato, but that's all right. I wanted to, I'm looking forward. I'm going to try to grab the book. But I thought it would be worthwhile for everybody to think about the fact that in terms of Hispanics and Muslims serving in the military, there are more of them doing this than there are people from the 1%. That there are givers and there are takers, and the 1% is right on it, right as we're doing things now, wanting more, and they seem to give less to society, and it I don't think it's sustainable. And first of all, thank you, and the author. I'm looking forward to reading the book, and but I just think people should think about this sometimes, that we all would be better off giving a little bit more than taking.
Dennis, thank you for the call.
I go to Arlington National Cemetery quite often, and I stand at the corner of Section 60, and I look at all the tombstones, all of our young men and women that have given their life to protect our liberty, to protect our, and we are grateful to our veterans. We are grateful to the families of men and women even serving today. It is because of them that we cherish and we enjoy these liberties and these freedoms. So we are grateful to them and their service.
You tell several stories in the books about a sort of serendipitous friendship that when you were in a jam, people that you didn't know stepped forward and helped you at a very critical time. It happened a number of times in your life.
There's just whole life has been blessed with compassion, with generosity, with kindness. At the most impossible moments, people have stepped forward. And that is what this nation is. The majority of this nation is so generous, so kind, so thoughtful, so accepting, so generous. And it is for that reason that these values that are enshrined must be preserved, that we must make sure that our nation is safe, physically safe, and safe from all those who have malice in their heart towards our nation. That we protect it, that we remain standing firm in support of our system of government, our democracy, and our values.
Let's take one more call here. We'll bring in Chris. He's calling from St. Louis. Chris, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Khan, I want to thank you for being the example you are of a good parent, a wonderful citizen of our country, and you're people like you that come to our country to make a new life. It's what's made our country what it is today. And I wish everyone could read your book and follow the example that you've set.
Thank you very much. I am so honored to hear this encouragement, and we will continue to speak the goodness that is enshrined in our value system, in our system of government, in our These values really have an amazing imprint on the character of America and American nation. I have had the fortunate moments in my life where I was able to compare that, what these values and these documents have given to this nation, exceptionally positive, exceptionally beacon of hope for the rest of the world nation, and it shall remain same because we will remain in standing in defense of these values. We will protect our nation. We will make sure that our future generation is fully aware of these values that have made us beacon of hope for the mankind. Thank you for your kind words.
In spite of the polarization in the country today, there are still a lot of people out of there who are more than willing to be welcoming to people who come from someplace else.
Yes, we must have strict laws, safety and security of our nation, but vulnerable communities, the communities, the minority communities, once they become citizen of United States, they all must have equal dignity and equal protection of law.
I just have one more question because time is getting away from us. But I think it was during your time when you were living in, and working in Dubai where you became familiar with and a fan of country music. And I'm just wondering how that music helped shape your vision and feelings about this country.
Yes. I was in – when I sat in the car, this is the drilling superintendent whom I was taking to the immigration office to resolve some matter. He turns the car's engine and the music comes out and it was country music being played, and he wanted to turn it off. And I said, no, let me listen. First time I'm listening. Since then, I have been a fan of it. I can understand the music. I can enjoy it, and I can cherish it. It has been, and it remains, very dear to me.
Well, Keyser Khan, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us. You're going to be appearing at the St. Louis County Library tonight at 7 o'clock. I understand there's already a full house lined up for that. So folks who didn't hear you here with us today are out of luck if they can't find a seat there. But thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Don. Thank you.
That's Keyser Khan, author of An American Family, a Memoir of Hope and Sacrifice. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.